Welcome to Rise to Offend, a podcast that explores people who rose to offend in society and their legacy today. I am your host, Jocelyn Sharp, and this week we are discussing TriStar's 1984 controversial Santa slasher, Silent Night, Deadly Night, a film that caused critics and parents to revolt against a major Hollywood studio and created a discussion on what is sacred for America. It forever changed the B-movie into a profitable format for A-movie studios.
All those reports about the demise of Silent Night, Deadly Night, the movie in which the killer is dressed as Santa, may have been premature. Scott Osborne has the story in our news studio.
After protests at many theaters showing the movie, TriStar Pictures pulled the film and put it on the shelf. But today, the film's producer, Ira Barmack, told us he has retrieved distribution rights and he plans to re-release Silent Night, Deadly Night after Christmas.
Joining me this week, as always, Petter Speich and Brandon Hahn. The uproar gained a lot of media attention, ending up on the CBS Evening News, and an article about the controversy ended up in People magazine. The two enraged mothers even ended up on Good Morning America, likely reaching a new audience, the stay-at-home mom group, who may have been unaware of the film, further igniting the debate.
Newspapers and film critics everywhere caught wind of the controversy and put their hats into the ring. Famous film critics Siskel and Ebert condemned the film, even going so far to say that all the money the filmmakers earned was blood money. Leonard Maltin called it a worthless splatter film, giving it 0 stars and asking, "What's next? The Easter Bunny as a child molester?" TriStar Pictures heard the message loud and clear, and nearly a week after the film's release in Milwaukee, they pulled it from theaters. One of the organizers from Citizens Against Movie Madness was invited to Good Morning America. Her name was Karen Knowles, and she boasted at the effectiveness of the protests by saying, "If they don't make any money off this sort of film, maybe they won't make any more like it." But that's not how this story goes. Silent Night, Deadly Night premiered the same weekend as A Nightmare on Elm Street and outgrossed the film with the weekend box office. The film was re-released a year later with a brand new marketing strategy, one that held back on the violent visuals and instead wore the controversy on its sleeve. People continued to flock to theaters, and because of it, the film spawned 4 sequels and even a loose remake.
Although the outrage appeared to be over the depiction of Santa Claus as a horror movie villain, or at least someone dressed as Santa, the use of a Christmas theme in horror movies had been done before in American films like Silent Night, Bloody Night, and Black Christmas, which was released in the U.S. as Silent Night, Evil Night. And more specifically, the use of an evil killer Santa had been done in 1972's Tales from the Crypt movie and 1980's Christmas Evil.
But nevertheless, in the first 3 weeks, it was into major profit, and TriStar pulled it. Mm-hmm. And Ira, who was in the deal with them, I was just a hired hand on the show, so I had no ownership or anything.
Right.
Ira, my memory, sort of went nuts with TriStar and said, "What are you doing? This is going to make a lot of money. I'm going to make a lot of money. This thing is working, and I've done everything I said I would do. Why are you pulling it?" And I'm a little scratchy on this, but I think that TriStar was about to make a new public offering of stock or something like that, and it scared them that this was going on, and I think that's why they pulled it.
The entire West Coast run of the film was canceled, isn't that correct?
That's my memory.
Mm-hmm.
That's my memory.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was because of some other kind of corporate thing. I mean, come on, give me a break. You think a studio, I myself have been out protesting some things that studios do, and they go to heck with it. It's making money, you know?
Right, sure.
So you know darn well it probably wasn't because of, let's get responsible and pull the show. It was some corporate thing, and my memory is that it was a stock offering that they were about to have or something. They didn't want this coming in conflict or people bringing it up at the meetings or whatever. But they did pull it.
But in all fairness, the film already had made back its profit, correct?
It was already in profit,
yeah,
when they pulled it.
Is the spirit of Christmas still strong in America?
Yeah, it's still strong, and that's why people got so pissed off.
In 1984, this was taboo for,
yes,
mainstream.
Yes.
Okay. Santa was almost like Jesus.
Right. And my thing is, keep in mind, all those other movies that you brought up, they never got advertisements. People weren't seeing advertisements when they open up the newspaper. They're not watching it when they're watching football game where the family's all around and they're seeing these advertisements for a killer Santa. These people didn't even know these other movies existed.
As soon as it hit the theaters, you know, the controversy began. You know, TriStar bought commercial time during Saturday afternoon football games.
You know, parents already had it with Friday the 13th, 1-2, whatever, Halloween, My Bloody Valentine, all the graduation day. And now, oh my God, is nothing sacred. Now they're taking Santa and turning him into a killer.
When you're putting it in people's faces, now all of a sudden you're going to get a reaction. And like we bring up every single week on the show, the second you have a reaction, it piques somebody else's curiosity.
I guess while Billy is taking his time turning around, we could talk about the myth that this is based on a novel called Sleigh Ride.
Good point. Yeah, this is absolutely not based on a novel named Sleigh Ride. Silent Night, Deadly Night was based on a screenplay called Sleigh Ride.
Well, that was the original title. I think that was your title.
Yeah, that was the title of the script that we developed together. You wrote, I was the producer on, and we developed it, and with Dennis, and it was called Sleigh Ride, one word, S-L-A-Y-R-I-D-E. Charles Sellier was quoted somewhere as saying that Silent Night, Deadly Night was based on a novel called Sleigh Ride that producer Ira Barmack gave. That like, producer Ivan Bark had option, but that's just not true.
Broad conspiracy to give the story credit to anybody but us.
Yeah, so just for to set the record straight once and for all, Silent Night, Deadly Night was based on the screenplay written by Michael Hickey that was originally called Sleigh Ride. And then TriStar was not able to use the title Sleigh Ride because there were, I believe, a couple of different features in development at other studios that had the same title, but weren't Christmas theme movies. But had the title, so they decided to not use that title for that reason and changed it to Silent Night, Deadly Night, which many people love the title Silent Night, Deadly Night more than Sleigh Ride. So,
I thought Sleigh Ride was a good title for
I loved the working title Sleigh Ride.
Despite protests, the film was a success in its first week, which was largely due to it being backed by a major studio and having a larger marketing budget than most horror films at the time. While slasher films were very popular in 1984, these movies were rarely backed by major studios. Since producer Ira Barmack had an acquaintance at TriStar that assisted him in selling the film Silent Night, Deadly Night, it was more widely distributed and had a bigger marketing budget than smaller companies like New Line Cinema, who released a little movie called A Nightmare on Elm Street at the same time.
Hey, Santa Claus. Hey, what you doing, huh?
Thinking about my parents.
Oh, good, good. Good, that's fine. A boy should think about his parents at Christmas. Good boy.
They're dead.
Oh, God. Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot. I'm sorry. Hey, Santa. Santa, you better sober up. You got a long night ahead of you.
Huh?
You remember what Santa Claus does on Christmas Eve, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah, I know what he does.
Better get started. Fucking party's dead anyway. Ah! Go get him, Santa. Go get him.
Silent Night, Deadly Night was released in 400 theaters compared to 165 theaters for A Nightmare on Elm Street, and it came in number 8 in the box office and grossed $1.4 million its first weekend, surpassing its production costs.
Our X-ray subject this week, the controversial Santa Claus killer movie, Silent Night, Deadly Night. Actually, there have been two controversies about Silent Night, Deadly Night. Even before the film was released a couple of weeks ago, its TV ad campaign caused a furor with its brief depiction of an axe-carrying Santa Claus. The distributor of this film, TriStar Pictures, which is co-owned by Columbia Pictures, CBS, and Home Box Office, pulled the commercial out of release after a week of protests by parents led by a Milwaukee group. Of course, commercials like that usually die out after a week anyway, so thanks a lot, fellas. So, let me repeat the names of the writer and director and producers of this film. Michael Hickey wrote the film, Charles E. Sellier Jr. directed it, and Ira Richard Barmack produced it. You people have nothing to be proud of, even if you made a few bucks off of all the negative publicity. Your profits truly are blood money. And Silent Night, Deadly Night now has the distinction of joining I Spit on Your Grave as one of the two most contemptible films I have seen. And I don't mean to think it's campy,
It really is quite awful.
TriStar had plans to expand the release as Christmas neared, but with pressure from groups like Citizens Against Movie Madness, radio stations began pulling ads, and some movie theaters began pulling the film. The television ads did stop running after the first week, but TriStar had only planned to run the movie ads for 1 week, depending on how successful the movie was.
I'm glad you mentioned those people's names, because quite frequently they think, gee, we'll make this exploitation film, we'll be able to buy our Mercedes and live in Bel Air, and nobody will ever know what we did. But I would like to hear them explain to their children and their grandchildren that it's only a movie.
What TriStar did seemed accidental, but was their ad campaign poorly planned?
No, absolutely. Here's a, I guess in a way, if you look at that, it was a success financially for that first week. You can say it wasn't, but imagine if they didn't. Look, dude, I'm gonna be the parent. You don't run a movie like Silent Night, Deadly Night in the middle of the afternoon during a football game when people are watching it. You shouldn't. You should have common sense not to do that. And now a lot of times you'll see an ad like for a film and you'll be like, all right, well, it's not as bad. Well, this movie was that bad, right? If anybody's seen the film, Santa rapes people. He kills this kid's family in front of him. He kills the father on the opening scene. And then he rips his mom's top off before he kills her. It's brutal. That's what Santa does in this film. So then the kid grows up, if people don't know, and he, after he's dressed up like Santa in a toy store, decides to start axing people. So this was a brutal, brutal film. So do I think that it should be advertised during Little House on the Prairie? Fuck no. Like, who are you guys trying to reach on that program? But it worked.
I think that was the first bare breast in any Charles Sellier film.
Oh, really?
Up to that point, probably 25, 30 films.
It would be out of place in a Grizzly Adams story.
Because he was basically a family filmmaker, wasn't he, Michael?
Yeah.
Made family films. Quite the departure, huh?
Well, we had done a horror film a couple years before called The Boogans. And that was a departure to begin with, but this was even further away than that one.
Nice sound here, the transition.
Mr. Hickey, you know, there, as the screenwriter, there was a real edge of black humor to the picture, but certainly not this sequence, huh? This was dead
no,
serious.
No, because you got to go back and forth between the funny and the horrible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, looking at that scene, what is there to object to about this movie?
Let's move on to Christianity now.
Well, this is what I thought people were going to be up in arms about. The depiction of the Catholic orphanage is in some ways not that flattering.
Well, certainly not Mother Superior, that's for sure.
Of course, the protesters never saw the movie, so they didn't know.
And it worked, and it got people talking, and they made their money back. Now, the whole goal of every single movie these days, again, back in the day, putting together a good movie was the goal. Now the goal, and they're starting to realize this in the 80s. This is the era of greed, by the way. Mm. Who cares about upper echelon? Who cares about taste? Make that money. So yeah, they released that. They released the trailer during the football game, during the Little House on the Prairie. People got pissed off, but if nobody got pissed off, it wouldn't have finished number 8 at the box office. It wouldn't even have registered. They wouldn't even have gotten their money back.
Well, the picture was on its way to grossing probably at least $20 million at the U.S. box office on a $1 million negative in 1984.
What do you base that on?
And I think it did like 4.2 million in 10 days and just like less than a quarter of the country. It had only opened in a quarter of the country. They were going to go wide with another 1,000 prints like 2 weeks later. But the protests kicked in and they got nervous and they pulled the movie.
I see.
Yeah, it outgrossed Nightmare on Elm Street in opening weekend when it came out.
This is why I disagree with you. Nightmare on Elm Street did not finish past that film. Was not advertised. That was New Line Cinema, a smaller studio at the time. Was not advertised during football games. Stayed in the theater for over 6 months and made triple the money.
The difference
they had
is,
to pool Silent Night, Deadly Night because of their advertising campaign. Think about what it could have made.
I think we cannot. I know that there's love for this movie in this group, but we cannot take out of this debate that Nightmare on Elm Street is a superior film.
Oh, that's, by see, far that's a superior what I'm saying. Film. So, yeah. without, see, what you're not we are not talking about is this. A Nightmare on Elm Street got popular because it was a good movie and word of mouth. I never saw a movie like Nightmare on Elm Street before Nightmare on Elm Street.
Nightmare on Elm Street, again, this is why you're right. We shouldn't compare it. Is that that wasn't based on a...
Based on a fictional character. It wasn't based on a beloved fictional character.
What's it called?
It wasn't based on a holiday. It wasn't based on a gimmick. It wasn't based on a cultural icon like Santa Claus.
Right.
Nightmare on Elm Street had an imaginary character named Freddy Krueger. That's a much different thing going on there. A premise that is original, a killer killing you in your dreams. That's the reason that movie made money.
But any horror movie advertised during these hours, during those shows, you don't think is going to have a backlash?
That's my point. But
the Santa Claus thing is even worse.
Without the backlash, though, there would have nobody would have went to go see it. It would not have gotten word of mouth, and they would have lost their ass. Nightmare on Elm Street, on the other hand, made it because it was a viable movie. It was a good movie.
You can imagine how popular this was with the PTA.
Oh, yeah. I think the PTA rallied big time against this.
They did in Los Angeles around the theater that was showing it, yeah.
Well, it was a bit of a national cause celeb. People magazine did a story about it. Phil Donahue did a whole hour with Ira Barmack, the producer.
You know what's funny about that, Michael? I got called to be on the Phil Donahue show. I was in Boston on vacation.
Oh.
And I told my girlfriend at the time, I said, I don't want to go on the Phil Donahue show. They're going to crucify me, you know?
They interviewed me on Entertainment Tonight. All you got to keep saying is, if you don't want to see it, don't go. But I thought the whole brouhaha was entertaining, and it was so strange, and the movie became so much more than it would have been without all that.
The film's director was Charles Edward Sellier Jr., an American television producer, screenwriter, novelist, and director best known for creating the American book and television series The Life and Times of Grizzly Adams. Sellier produced numerous films and television shows, often with Christian themes aimed at family-friendly audiences. Why he was chosen to film a horror movie depicting Santa Claus is unclear. Because director Charles E. Sellier Jr. was uncomfortable shooting the death scenes, the film's editor Michael Spence had to come in as the co-director for the film on these scenes.
I'm going to ask you the question I'm sure people have been asking you all these years, and that's, I assume at the time you were practicing Christian as well, correct?
Yes.
What was your mindset about making a film not only with the killer Santa Claus, but there was the sadistic nun, there was rape, mutilation, all these brutal things? Did you have any moral qualms about doing it while you were producing it and directing it?
Certainly none at the time.
Uh-huh.
I have had people over the years ask me, did I have something against the Catholic Church, or was I trying to make a statement or something like that? Absolutely not. My thoughts at the time were, these things go on. I mean, they're isolated and they're unusual, but then people becoming slashers are isolated and unusual. I don't think we think that there's these brilliant doctors out there all the time that can do these things, to get away with these kinds of things. They're once-in-a-lifetime events,
right?
But they do occur. And so my thought process was that you have to mold this mind into becoming a slasher, and the audience needs to see the kinds of things that cause minds to be molded into these things. And the device used by the book was some kind of Catholic orphanage, I guess is what it was, that he was sent to.
Right.
And so I never had an opinion then or now negative about the Catholic Church. However, I did feel that these things do go on, and of course today we know they go on. I mean, it's in the headlines today.
Producer Ira Barmack defended his film in People magazine, saying, "People have taken offense at Santa being used in a scary context. Santa Claus is not a religious figure. He's a mythic character. I didn't deliberately ride roughshod over that sensitivity, and I didn't anticipate the objection
Barmack
to it."
Barmack bought the Silent Night, Deadly Night screenplay because the premise, God forgive me, struck me as funny, he said. "I thought it could really work with the right balance of humor and fright. Our target audience is teenagers over 17 and young adults who go to these pictures like they go on roller coasters. They aren't looking for a believable story. They go to be startled, to yell back at the screen."
Well, yeah, when the film came out, I saw it in multiple theaters around New York City and Boston, and there were folks out front Mothers Against Movie Madness at the time was a group that was just had it with the whole slasher genre. And this was like the straw that broke the camel's back, defiling Santa Claus in their mind. And the protesters were out in front of the theaters, I remember, with signs saying, "Santa ain't no hitman," and "deck the hall with holly, not bodies."
The mistake that was made was the TV stations that ran the commercials running them in prime time instead of late at night.
Yes.
Because those protesters hadn't seen the movie. They were there on opening day. What they had seen was the commercials, watching TV with their kids.
Yeah, I think they ran the ads for the movie during the Green Bay Packers football game on a Sunday. Talk about family hour. You know, and the folks are seeing with their kids watching the football game, and they're seeing the ads for Silent Night, Deadly Night with Santa picking up an axe, and they all, mothers went ballistic.
Barmack also noted, those promos were made to run late. It was a mistake to air them sooner. He says, I wanted the movie advertised on rock radio and on MTV. The ads ran for 1 week and were canceled before the movie's opening. I am sorry that people are upset, he said.
So Ira gets the show back and takes it out on video. Mm-hmm. I don't know his arrangements with TriStar or what went on there, but he did extremely well. And that's the last that I knew about it until I get a call from Live. Do you remember Live? It was called Live Video, big L-I-V-E, Live Video.
I see.
And so Live says, we want you to do another one of these. And I'm going, no, sorry. Number one, I don't direct real often, and there's got to be a real good reason to, you know, the president of a studio or something's got to call, cause me to,
right.
To direct. Secondly, I did not like the fact that that film was protested. I'd never made a film in my whole life that had been protested by the public, and I just didn't want to go back there.
Sure.
They ended up making another four of these things.
Sure.
And they used a lot of my footage in two or three of them.
Yeah, the second one is more than half your footage.
Yeah. Yeah. And so those are still on the shelf. Now, I don't see, the only one I see is the original on the shelf these days. I don't see the two through five.
Well, it's like night and day. You're not missing much. The first one is heads and tails above any of the sequels, as is usually the case.
Do you think these parents had a right to be outraged? Is this ad placement inappropriate?
I think everybody has a right to be outraged.
I agree, man. I think that, but I go back to the ad placement was completely inappropriate. I don't think that you should air these kind of ads at that time.
We never thought about that for a second, Michael, did we, that it was going to lead to the media circus that it did?
No, neither did Ira.
No.
Some of the executives at TriStar, when they saw the movie, had some misgivings about it, and mm-hmm. they said, can we actually go ahead with this? So mm-hmm. to gauge public reaction, they did a preview in Rosemead, yeah, California. And the theater was full of 18 to 24-year-olds, just the target audience, and it was very positive. So that encouraged TriStar to go ahead.
Now, going back to the director, this is one of my favorite things about the story of Silent Night, Deadly Night. Charles Edward Sellier Jr. was a Christian director, right? And what this guy would do is, when they were shooting the kill scenes or the sex scenes in the movie, he would not be involved, and he'd have a person that had no skill whatsoever to film this, his editor at the time. So, like, when you watch the film, the kill scenes are brutal. Everything else in the film is kind of funny, but the kill scenes are brutal because he shoots them as basic as you possibly can. The sex scene, the lead actor in the film is very, like, in shape, good-looking guy. He zooms in on his hairy ass, and that's all you see. You're like, why am I looking at this guy's hairy ass? Because the guy shooting it...
It's what the people want.
Have no idea. Like, yeah, don't look at the girl's, you know, beautiful breasts. Let's stare at his hairy ass. It's the most awkwardly shot kill scenes and sex scenes, and that makes you lose the humor of the film, and it's too real. The fact that this Christian director they chose was scared to do that stuff only adds to the brutality of this film.
Well, ho, ho, ho. I don't get enough of this shit on the radio. It has to come into my store now.
What's the matter? You don't like Santa Claus?
It's good for business, bad for my stomach. A lot of phony sentiments, you know what I'm saying? What charity are you with? What the hell are you doing that for?
I'm holding you up, asshole. Put the money in the bag.
All right. So it's not all phony sentiment, is it?
A lot of it's genuine greed.
All right, you. $31. Merry fucking Christmas.
So, back to the question. The ads. The guy that produced this film, Ira, probably thought it was the script. And it was based on a book as well. I think it was called Sleigh Ride or something. Probably thought it was this corny, goofy script. But he never watched the film. And he was like, hey, it's not going to be that bad. Well, when you give an editor free range to shoot the fucking death scenes, guess what, man? You're going to have B-movie times 10, and that's what this movie got. So I don't even think he realized how brutal this film actually was.
And when you read the script for the first time, what did you think of it initially?
I thought it was the genre that was currently in vogue, and that it had potential. And the script was just okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, I see today what I would call brilliant scripts that will touch the hearts and touch the minds of people. And I'm a storyteller, and I want to affect people, hopefully in a positive way. And I thought it was basically relatively one-dimensional, the story I told you. I like things that have a plot, a subplot, a twist, and a learning or an awareness. And I feel that we were able to bring that to it with the filmmaking and with the post-production. But as a script, it was linear.
But the thing is, though, is again, it's not even about the film. It's about the advertising. And do these people have a right to get upset? Absolutely, they have a right to get upset. You're watching Little House on the Prairie, then all of a sudden, here's Santa raping people? I mean, it's like, take it easy, you know? I mean, granted, that wasn't in the commercial, but I don't think it was. It wasn't in the commercial, but all I'm saying is the imagery of a beloved character like Santa Claus who
axing people,
and you see, you put some 5-year-old who has been waiting all year long for Santa Claus to show up at his house, and all of a sudden Santa might kill my parents and rape my mom. Like, you know what? Maybe we should have pumped the brakes a little bit. But again, I still stand by this. And they did do the commercials where they wanted to put them, like on MTV, like on rock radio. The movie, we wouldn't even be doing a podcast about it right now.
There's always been a philosophical discussion on free speech and censorship. In the horror genre, writers and directors had to subvert their dialogue by creating monsters and creatures to get across their beliefs without being attacked or most literally imprisoned. Laws have, of course, become less restrictive over time, but censorship continues to play a role in what movies we see today. I think Sam Raimi said it best while he was on a press tour for Evil Dead 2. Enjoy that
particular would you let your kids watch anything at all like this? Have you got any children?
I would rather that they watched horror movies. I'd rather that they had... They lived in a free society where they have the ability to watch those horror movies rather than in a society...
What, in the Flintstones, I think?
Well, rather than in a society where censorship or a group of people is determining for me what I can and cannot show my children.
Films like I Spit on Your Grave, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Exorcist, and Psycho are not only phenomenal pieces of art, but phenomenal examples of movies that have continued to push against censorship guidelines. Of course, Silent Night, Deadly Night is a cult classic and has become nothing much other than a fun slasher flick, but its place in time is significant to the entirety of the horror genre. Whether it was intended as a cash grab, another run-of-the-mill slasher, or even commentary on the overreach of religion, it continues to join the armoire of movies that are pushing the boundaries of censorship in genre filmmaking.
I disagree with that. I think that if they did the advertising correctly, this movie would have made triple the money. I think rock radio and MTV, people would have ran to this movie without the controversy. I really think this is a rare occasion in Rise to Offend world where the controversy hurt the film. I think it completely neutered the film and took it out.
I'm just saying it was a bad movie. It's still known as
a
bad movie.
It's a great
movie. No, it's not. Shut up.
You talk to George Romero, you talk to anyone today compared to when George and I, when we were together in 76 on this seminar, and we were young filmmakers trying to tell stories that hadn't been told, trying to do unusual things, and not thinking so much about consequences. Mm-hmm. And this is why I think the older, more experienced filmmakers need, and I try to do this today with the younger filmmakers, is I speak regularly at film schools and at writing schools and try to explain consequences to them.
Right.
Because young filmmakers don't think of that, and we didn't think of that at the time. I literally was thinking about, do I really want to do this because it's going to be cold? My crew is going to be pressuring me for a job. I want to give Mike a chance to direct. Okay, we'll do it.
Right.
It was very pragmatic.
To Pete's point, to be fair, this was a time when horror fans expected to get their information a specific way. So trying to advertise to the demographic outside of the way they get their information, you're going to lose the people who are truly going to buy into your product.
But unlike Nightmare on Elm Street, which is a slow burn, because it was a good movie, people would have saw this piece of shit and then it would have been it. It would have been grand opening, grand closing. Nightmare on Elm Street had what was needed for sustainability.
Johnny Depp.
Yes.
No, I always felt that, you know, we were developing the script in the time of Halloween and Friday the 13th and all the slasher craze that was going on. I always thought, wow, teenagers are the most, like, rebellious characters in the universe. They'll love this idea, you know? Because it was an R-rated movie, yes, aimed for the...
Yes, of course.
...that crowd.
And in fact, I think they did.
I think they did, too, but...
I mean, it wasn't really made for Siskel and Ebert.
And it wasn't made for the PTA or Movies Against Mothers Against Movie Madness. It was made for the teenage audience.
In reality, it wasn't even made for me. I had never seen any of the slasher movies. I still haven't.
And you know what? That's probably a good thing, because as a result of that, I think we ended up with a screenplay that was better in many ways than your typical then-slasher story.
Well, it was different because I didn't know what was typical.
Right, and that was a good thing, I think.
Siskel and Ebert gave a scathing review of the film, with Siskel claiming it was one of the two most contestable films I've ever seen, the other being I Spit on Your Grave. They even focused on this in a special segment in which Siskel criticized the ad, saying, "The showing of Santa with an axe on free TV and commercials is sick and sleazy and mean-spirited," and also claiming, "You people have nothing to be proud of, even if you made a few bucks off of all the negative publicity." Siskel called TriStar's profits truly blood money.
Coming up next at the movies, a film that dreams about a red Christmas.
Siskel also called out companies behind the film. TriStar Pictures, co-owned by Columbia Pictures, CBS, and Home Box Office, shame on you. Leonard Maltin reviewed the film, stating the following in his zero-star review. What's next? The Easter Bunny is a child molester?
Off a surprise, I'm approaching the orphanage now. Everything looks okay. There's a bunch of kids playing in the yard. Holy shit.
Sorry, sister. But at least it's all over.
Captain, we got a problem here.
The description of the dead man, it's all wrong.
What do you mean all wrong?
Bart says the guy's about 50, under 6 feet tall.
My God. It's Father O'Brien. He was our Santa this year.
The kid we're looking for is 18.
Barnes wanted the guy to stop, Captain. He didn't respond.
Of course not. He's deaf. He couldn't hear it.
You tell Barnes to stay at the orphanage. The killer may still be on his way there.
in for.
Was Santa sacred in 1984, and did the major studio release of a film like this cross lines, or was the advertising the real issue?
The advertising was the real issue. I think eventually it would. The movie's already been made already. The slasher Santa thing has already been done before at this point. It was just the advertising. The fact that Siskel called it blood money, though, take it easy, man. Nobody got killed. Nobody got murdered. Take it easy.
Santa's watching, Santa's waiting. Christmas Eve is slowly fading. Can you hear him in the night? Close the door, turn out the light.
The advertising was a huge issue, but dude, Santa Claus was sacred. That was, you know how much Santa profited people? Like, you couldn't cross that line in a business sense, because Christmas, still to this day, is such a profitable time for our economy and everything like that. That story that built everybody up to go buy things you're going to fuck with and you're going to make people scared of, this was going at businesses in a lot of ways. So I totally feel that the advertising was at fault. The advertising was risky, but I think the film itself...
It was a dangerous film, but I don't think it would have got the scathing reviews if it wasn't for the advertising, if it wasn't for the mothers that were trying to unite to get it pulled. I think it would have been like two thumbs down, half star, but because it got so much buildup, then they really wanted to trash it.
And you know what's so amazing about all this, Michael, is that when we were developing the project and you were writing it, many people at the time would have said, what is this? This is all just backstory. Why are you boring the audience with all this? Let's get to the killings, right? Let's get to the rampage.
Well, I think you and I agreed immediately on what we wanted the story to be, which was to concentrate on Billy rather than his victims, to watch the dominoes fall that take him from being an innocent child to an...
And you said it beautifully, I thought. And please remind me, Michael, you said the reason... The backstory really became the story because, from your point of view, it was so interesting to work backwards. How did that guy with the axe in the second half of the movie grown up? How did he get that way, right?
Well, if you know that's your concept and that's where you're going, you really have to answer the question. You can't just take it for granted that there's a Santa Claus slasher.
And in answering that question, we found almost the first 40 minutes of the movie, right?
Yes. Also, I was very under the influence of The Shining, which is about the slow unfolding of the circumstances that turn Jack into a rampaging killer.
Right.
And that's essentially what this movie is about.
Well, here's the thing. Critics are going to be snobby, and they only review box office films. Leonard Maltin saying something like, what's next, the Easter Bunny as a child molester? That's hilarious to me.
It's funny.
So funny.
You know, you got to understand is that, like, that guy is, these film critics have egos. They're like, dude, we don't watch shit like this. Send this to direct the video. We don't put this on our show and say, watch this or don't watch this. So in their way, their reviews are like, we're offended TriStar made us watch this and we had to do this for our job.
We talked about the controversy after the film. Do you think that actually helped it in a way, made it more enticing to people who wanted to see what the fuss was all about?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I always feel that way.
Right.
Let me, if I may, Adam, just say one more thing that I now speak about how we are affecting society and how we are affecting kids and how we've got to be more responsible in our filmmaking. And part of that is due to my inadvertently making a film that had an impact that I wasn't expecting. I was young. I didn't have that kind of experience, although I had a lot of filmmaking experience. I didn't have a lot of that kind of experience. And it created an awareness in me that I had to be more careful and more responsible and more understanding of what I did.
Do you think, though, as, you know... we're both intense horror fans. Do you think that this was the start of what is now part of the horror movie zeitgeist in that there is pride in bad reviews?
I don't think at this point a bad review helped the film in any way. I don't. In 1984, I think a bad review neutered a film. I think people truly listened to before the internet, critics mattered. I know people, it's hard to believe
that's
that.
Because they were
before the internet, they were educated, they were intelligent, they had a way to go. Now, did I agree with their reviews 9 times out of 10? No. Clockwork Orange got bad reviews. We talked about shit like this, you know? People trusted them weekly to see what they're going to go see at the cinema. So, yeah. No, a critic mattered back then.
Can you believe this? It's Christmas Eve, and we got orders to bring in Santa Claus. Hey, Miller, what do you think the captain would do if we brought in the real one?
He was never satisfied. He'd send us back out to pick up the Easter Bunny. Peter Pan, maybe.
Hey, look.
What are you doing? What do you think you're doing?
Hold it. Stop right there.
Daddy.
Daddy.
I think the genre of people going to see bad movies and knowing they're bad movies and enjoying how bad they are, I think that came a decade later. I think this was the beginning, though. I think this was the beginning at when you can actually start laughing at this shit.
Yeah, I think you had to make a good film, even if it was a B movie, for it to survive.
But that's what I'm saying. Look at some of the things that came out in the early 90s. That's when Mystery Science Theater came out. That's when they started making jokes about these bad movies. And that kind of launched a whole different genre of entertainment.
Mommy, were you ever naughty when you were little?
Once or twice.
Did Santa Claus ever punish you?
Where did you get an idea like that, hon?
Grandpa.
Grandpa?
Grandpa said Santa Claus was going to punish me.
Think Dad could have talked to him?
I don't see why Billy would lie. Maybe we ought to call Dr. Conway.
I don't want him to come. I'm scared.
Of who, honey?
Santa Claus.
Honey, there's nothing to be scared of.
Grandpa said Santa Claus was going to punish me.
Billy, calm down. Grandpa is nothing but a crazy old fool.
Mommy, you shouldn't have said that. It's naughty to say bad things about old people. Santa Claus will punish you.
Days later, TriStar withdrew the film from release after only 2 weeks. The official line was that the film was a box office disappointment, which was not true considering the movie more than made back its production cost. TriStar abandoned Silent Night before it even made it to the West Coast and spent weeks fighting producer Ira Barmack's efforts to buy back domestic distribution rights to the picture. The parties finally made a deal, ironically enough, the week before Christmas of 1984. The new distributor, Aquarius Film Releasing, reissued the film to theaters, including out west, in May of 1985, with ads playing down Santa and playing up the controversy.
Was this Linnea Quigley's first slasher movie?
Good question. I don't think so.
She made a number of them to earn the nickname the Scream Queen.
Yeah. And these kids were pretty good here. They seemed, as opposed to the earlier sex scenes with the different actors, these kids seemed really comfortable with one another. There was a playfulness to it that I thought felt real.
I sat in on this casting session with these two.
I bet you did, Michael.
and Chuck had them kind of do this, and we had to stop them. They were getting a little bit really into it. There's four or five old guys sitting around, not old guys then, but guys sitting around chairs watching them do this.
That's hysterical.
Cindy, don't come down here. We're doing our homework. Cindy, if you don't go back to bed, Santa won't come.
He's not the only one.
These people that wanted to buy it back after TriStar's like, fuck, we need to pull this film because we're getting all this backlash from critics and things like that. The reason that someone bought that back is they're trying to ride that hype train and be like, oh, if we put it out now, it's going to work out. But no, after the critics spoke, the movie was dead. It was a dead movie. Nobody was going to go see it, and nobody did afterwards. It made its money in those first 2 weeks before it got pulled.
Mike Spence did a wonderful, wonderful job of the second unit stuff and added dimensions that a low-budget film could never hope to have. Massively creative in his angles and some of the things that he came up with, and made me, a director, look like $1 million. I mean,
so he really did shoot the action scenes just like you anticipated.
He did.
Okay.
Oh yeah. Uh-huh. And with style, mm-hmm. I thought. And there are some things in Silent Night, Deadly Night that at the time had never been tried before, mm-hmm. and had sort of never been seen before. And you know how it is as a filmmaker, you're always trying to one-up the last thing that was done. And again, now we do it with computers, and I work heavily today with computers on all this stuff. But back then, it took a massive amount of creativity and being able to act quick on a set, and what can you make me in the next hour kind of stuff. And I just thought that the crew did an unusually good job.
You go to websites where it's a collection of people giving reviews, and then you get an idea of a percentage, like what percentage liked it, what percentage didn't.
Not just websites. Social media has given people the misconception that their opinion matters.
And that's the funny thing is, like, I'll tell you how I know when it's a shitty movie is when you don't see Rolling Stone gives it 4 stars. This gives it 5 stars. It's when they show the Twitter handles of random people and they're like, this movie was awesome. And it's like, you know, at WizardDick772. It's just like, you know, this is going to be bad.
Critics used to keep studios accountable for the product they were putting out. And now the product's much worse these days because nobody's keeping them accountable. Because you can sell a cool poster, you can sell a cool trailer. And you can, if you can't put it in a theater, you can sell it to Netflix, you know, or Amazon. That's why critics, as annoying as they are, because I don't agree with them a lot of the time, especially when it comes to horror movies or comedies, you know, stuff like that. Critics were a vital part to keeping films and cinema on a certain level because their words mattered. When they don't matter, it's like, what's an A movie now? Honestly, The Irishman's a Netflix movie. That, to me, is the definition of an A movie, right? The Scorsese movie that's coming out? Like, yeah, what's an A movie?
Yeah,
now?
But the fact that it's only going to be in theaters for 2 weeks and then
that's
go straight
to... That's
that would be the category. That's right there is the classification of a B movie.
Yes, and that's what I mean. Now, without the critics keeping people accountable, everything is treated like a B movie.
This is Quentin Tarantino, who has his own personal print of Silent Night, Deadly Night. This is one of his favorite scenes from the movie coming up. He and Robert Rodriguez... both actually did this scene word for word on the stage at in Austin at a film festival. They got up and did this scene from Silent Night, Night of the Night that's coming up. They knew all the lines, line by line. What a crack up it was.
Wow.
Do you agree with Roger Ebert's opinion that horror films are generally misogynistic and therefore do not deserve good ratings?
Yes. I'm going to tell you why I agree with it. Okay, I agree with the fact that they're generally misogynistic. Yes. I don't agree with the fact that they deserve bad ratings because you have to give everything a chance before you can rate it. Like, if things are misogynistic and some guy's misogynistic in the movie, but then he ends up getting put into a wood chipper, then you're kind of like, yeah, that's what the guy gets.
You look at a film.
Thumbs up.
See, they look uncomfortable. Look at her. Look here. They just look so uncomfortable together there to me.
Yeah, she is definitely not into it.
And all, you know, maybe that's why you cut away to those close shots.
I don't
think
she'd had a lot of experience on camera with these scenes.
You mean naked?
Naked.
It's like a film like A Nightmare on Elm Street. It's not misogynistic.
That's the thing.
Scream queens are women defeating these guys. We go back to Jamie Lee Curtis from Halloween and stuff like that. I do not agree with that at all. Now, are there misogynistic horror films? Yeah. Well, there's misogynistic comedies. There's misogynistic action films, you know. But for the most part, I do think that the horror genre, if anything, has made the woman more powerful than they really have. In the 80s and the 90s, the weak girl that can't do anything, that's a virgin, can kill someone like Freddy Krueger.
You know, what is it with you lately, Billy?
Nothing.
And I'm going to level with you. When you came here a couple of months ago, you were an all right kid. But all of a sudden, you got this fucking attitude problem. Snapping at me all the time. You're staring off into space like some moon goon.
Will you just leave me alone, all right?
When I leave you alone, asshole, none of your fucking work gets done.
Look, I don't care about my fucking work.
Oh, is that so, wise ass?
Look, just leave me alone.
Merry Christmas, everyone. Merry Christmas.
Come here, you little bastard.
Yeah, but also don't forget that there's this, not to get too like esoteric about it, there's this underlying symbolism in horror films, and that women represent everything good and pure and men represent everything bad and evil. It's these horrible, ugly, gross men chasing down these pure, beautiful women. And that's the underlying like theme. And you can say that horror films are misogynistic because they're naked women getting their clothes ripped off and being murdered. But guess what? That's the fucking world. That's how the world is.
That's right. Part of the sleaze factor. Yeah. Though. I mean, you're getting someone stabbed. And I've heard the theory of like the knife is a phallic symbol and these women are weak. And it's like, listen, dude, no, that's not the way I see things.
Yeah, it's a knife. It stabs people. It's been doing it for thousands of years.
In a horror film with someone shooting people and running, it doesn't really have the same effect. It's got to be up close, personal, and gross. Gross, right? And so when you're going sleazy, and that going back again to the giallo films, yeah, like there's a strength and a weakness, and there's anger, and then there's innocence, right? What represents innocence better than a beautiful female?
Virgin
people?
Female.
Yeah, yeah, nothing. What represents anger better than some fucking, you know, incel killer? You know, that's what it always kind of had. So
that's right, because Jason and Michael Myers never got pussy.
Are you all right, Billy?
Yeah. Yeah, I...
You don't look so good.
No, I'm fine. Really. Come on, Jerry.
Don't worry about this stuff. I'll straighten it up for you, okay? Are you sure you're all right, Billy?
Yeah. Yeah, I... never felt better in my life.
Horror films was the first genre to really make women the heroine.
Right.
They were the first genre to be like, oh, look at her get beat down. But then, like, I Spit on Your Grave, for example. That entire movie is predicated on a woman at her worst and then coming back and making her entire, like, taking all of the revenge, like the Bronson thing about earlier.
Yeah, she was like the death. She got raped. If anybody didn't see I Spit on Your Grave, a brutal rape scene, hard movie to watch. She comes back and kills all those motherfuckers. They remade it 3 times. I actually like the remakes. But
I love the remakes.
The remakes are great. The point is that, yeah, that it shows someone innocent and weak coming up to be Charles Bronson, dude, as a female. Yeah. So Roger Ebert's wrong. And Brandon, when you said yes so fast, you're wrong, motherfucker.
Ha-ha.
The rape scene in Silent Night, Deadly Night, the killings, they have a tendency to be, as well as their shot, a lot more brutal and violent than a lot of these films. Were you trying just to unnerve audiences by the sheer horror, or do you disagree with that it wasn't as violent as a lot of the films?
No, it was. It was done in such a segmented manner that when it came together, it felt like another low-budget show. It felt like another in a genre to me. And when I cut it together and looked at it for the first time, I said, this thing is more intense than I thought it was going to be.
That's interesting.
And this thing, but I saw it from a story point of view, and my feeling of the time was, this tells an intensive story. This was my feeling about seeing it cut together for the first time.
It was released to video, and the film would become a huge hit on the rental market. The filmmakers involved would want to distance themselves, but when they saw that the film was a hit and sequels were a necessity, they started to come back. Why is there less hysteria over a remake of the film, even though The War on Christmas is an annual debate that's very popular on most news channels?
Well, because we're desensitized to it now.
And these were not theatrically, these were independent films that were going off of what Silent Night, Deadly Night did. Weren't major things. You know what I'm saying? They really weren't. And the filmmaker, as we talk about, Charles Edward Sellier Jr., the guy that directed the film, like, he passed away in 2011. His obituary says nothing about Silent Night, Deadly Night. It specifically just says he did Grizzly Adams and a lot of other Christian things.
Right. Because, see, I was looking at it as a director and as a storyteller. My focus was on the story, and the story was the plight of this boy.
Right.
And how unfair this really all was.
Uh-huh.
He didn't want to be associated with this project. And again, he didn't even film the parts that were really sleazy and scary. You know, he had someone else do it. He delegated what control he had and said, you make it as rough as you can. So he wasn't proud of the film, obviously, and he directed it. You know, he took it as a paycheck and he moved forward. But sequels, unless they have the backing of a major studio like the first one did, you know.
And guess what? Guess what didn't happen with the sequels? They didn't get the commercials played during Little House on the Prairie and football games, and no one gave a shit. No one got angry. No one piqued anyone's interest with that anger, and no one went and saw the movie.
And they sucked.
And they sucked.
Well, let me not say that.
You can only cash in on hysteria once.
Pete, they sucked.
I think, go ahead, Justin.
You can only cash in on hysteria once. We know that now in 2019. We see that with the headline culture. You only cash in once. It's harder to get people as outraged about the sequel because they're like, oh, well, they already got the,
exactly,
you know.
Yeah. Santa already murdered people.
Yeah. You can't get, it's, so that's why there's less hysteria, is because it's already been gone through once. And the thing that people don't understand is when people are hysterical about a creative thing, if there's hysteria over something created, the people who are hysterical are not the consumers. They don't matter. They don't matter to the profitable bottom line of that piece of art.
Most people that protest never saw the artwork. They just protest because they heard what it's about.
Before we end, do you have anything else you want to say about Silent Night, Deadly Night? Any recollections or final thoughts? No, I think I've pretty much told you all I remember about it.
Follow my co-host Brandon Hahn on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Mr. Hahn Comedy. Myself on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Jocelyn Sharp, and Sylvia Alvarado on Twitter and Instagram at It's the Sylvia. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Rise to Offend, and on Instagram at Rise to Offend Official. And make sure to listen to us every Monday on the Metal Sucks podcast on metalsucks.net. Email us comments, questions, errors we may have made, or any figure you would like us to cover at risetooffend@gmail.com. Discover the film legacy, Silent Night, Deadly Night. View the interviews on YouTube and discover all the horror films in the slasher and giallo genres. All content on this show is copyrighted by its owners. Thank you all so much for the reviews on iTunes. These 5-star reviews help us grow, and it is all we ask of you guys. Please, if you listen to the show and appreciate all the hard work behind it, review the show on iTunes. It truly means the world to us that you take the time to listen and you take the time to leave us a review. Until next week, repeat offenders, RTO Podcast, signing off.